Please be seated. Court is ready to hear argument in 060414 in re Team Rocket.
Argument for the relators. Relators have reserved 5 minutes for it.
May it please the court, counsel, Cindy Shepherd for Relators, Team Rocket LP, MLF Airframes Inc., and Mark Frederick. Your Honors, the issue in this mandamus case is really not whether this respondent trial court abused its discretion, because clearly it did when it disregarded proper venue procedure. Rule 87.5 makes clear that parties are entitled to only one venue determination in any given case, and any subsequently filed case that is filed with the same claims and parties. Here, the plaintiff real parties in interest were unhappy with the first venue determination that they received in Harris County. When the trial court transferred the case to Williamson County, where the defendants reside, where they do their business, and where the alleged negligence took place. Rather than follow the clear procedure set forth in the venue statutes and go ahead and try the case in Williamson County and then appeal that venue ruling, they chose instead to voluntarily non-suit their case in Williamson County, filed and refiled the same case in Fort Bend County, where the only connection to this case is that it happens to be where the plane crash occurred.
What do you do with our language in Masonite where we said that the ordinary situation where a trial court abuses its discretion, and the quote is, that situation involves only the resources of the errant trial court and the parties that remain, and in that case, even though the trial court has committed reversible error, we will not issue mandamus?
Well, I think, for one thing, you can take the language from In re Masonite and support mandamus in this case, because in In re Masonite, this court held that a trial court's failure to follow proper venue procedure is reason to issue a mandamus. And I think what's implied in that holding is that if you've already got reversible error built into a case, and the trial and the appeal will be an absolute fiction because you know it's going to be reversed, you know it's in the wrong county, then there is no reason to do that. And the only way to enforce that statute and the procedure that's set forth by the legislature is to issue a mandamus.
But that involved multiple cases and multiple courts, and we called that a truly extraordinary situation. And specifically said, if it were one case, one errant court, that will not be mandamus.
Yes, Your Honor, and my answer to that is twofold. One thing is this, we're not relying solely on In re Masonite. One thing that sets this case apart is this is an error that is likely to be repeated by many parties, and that is because if plaintiffs realize that they can form shop at their leisure, then they are going to do so until they find a friendly court. And that means a given plaintiff, even one plaintiff, could file in the state of Texas 254 times.
Well,
in
we
one
could,
case.
Counsel, we can still, if we can still stop that, just wait until the case is tried, then issue an opinion after that and say that doesn't happen. Now, that may not address what an injustice in your case as you perceive it, but we could still stop that. It would just be after the trial, right?
Well, if that were the case, Your Honor, it would already be stopped because that is already the clear law. It doesn't stop it because it gives the plaintiffs the right or the opportunity to abuse the system by jumping from court to court till they find one who's willing to disregard the collateral estoppel effect of that first court's decision.
But if an opinion in this case were to issue after trial and we said, absolutely, don't do this, even though we may not have taken it on mandamus, don't do it, then that's, I'd like to think that counsel across the state are going to listen to that.
Well, Your Honor, you may be right, but as the state of the law stands right now, that already is the law.
I'm not sure. Justice O'Neill talked about Masonite. In Bridgestone versus Firestone versus the 13th Court of Appeals in 1996, we said, and in the case where the Woods argued that they were entitled to mandamus, because there was no adequate remedy by appeal. We said we disagree, quote, there are no extraordinary circumstances in this case. The rule is that venue determinations generally are not reviewable by mandamus. Do we have to overturn Bridgestone to get to your conclusion?
No, I'm sorry. I misunderstood your question, Your Honor. I thought you meant whether it was error for the court to not give collateral estoppel to the first ruling. Clearly, that's already the law. So if all we have is a regular appeal without a mandamus, the state of the law stays the same, and that is you're not supposed to do that, trial court, but we're not going to allow any intervention at this point. We're going to make the parties and the courts waste, just an utter waste of resources, trying a case and filing an appeal that has absolutely no benefit to anybody.
But doesn't that benefit you? I mean, if you win at trial, the case goes away. If you lose, you get another shot.
Well, Your Honor, my clients, I guarantee most clients do not want to have to try a case twice. It's just, you know, if we're going to win.
Yeah, but many clients would like, if they lose, to have a free new trial. And so, I mean, I hear what you're saying in terms of having to do it again, but you only have to do it again if you don't win. I mean, if you lose, don't you want another shot by the automatic reversal?
Well, I think the efficient use of our resources, both the parties and the courts, is to try the case in the right court one time. And the only way to do that is to issue mandamus to make this trial court transfer it back to Williamson County. And really, that's the whole purpose of the venue statutes in the first place, because we go back to the days when there were multiple trials and multiple appeals, and this venue statute was passed to prevent that. So there's one trial and there's one appeal, and we don't have all these multifarious litigations going on. And one problem with it, and the second part of my answer to your question, Justice O'Neill, is that this court has adopted a balancing test. In In Re Prudential and in other cases, this court has stated that it's really a flexible rule, and it involves a careful consideration of different jurisprudential considerations of both the private parties and the public interest. And one test is whether there are any benefits to mandamus and what the detriments are if you don't issue mandamus. And here, there'd be absolutely no benefit, in my opinion, notwithstanding your opinion, Justice O'Neill, to not issue mandamus. And the detriments would be great, and that's what I want to concentrate on, because it's not just the cost to these parties of trying the case one more time.
But it is primarily the cost, it would seem to me. I mean, the litigation is driven by cost. Irrespective of what the value of the case may be, it seems to me that you need to get it right the first time. Otherwise, courts and companies and plaintiffs are wasting time and are wasting money and are wasting resources that could be used to fight other litigation.
Well, and that's correct, Your Honor. And to me, it's just a public policy question of whether we want to utterly waste the judicial resources of this state in this kind of situation.
But how is that different if I've got a medical malpractice case and I'm the plaintiff, and I put on a doctor who's clearly not qualified, or I try to qualify an attendant as a doctor to articulate a standard of care for brain surgery, and that's just clearly wrong. The court lets them in. Well, that's a waste of trial because that's reversible error. Why can't I mandamus the trial court's ruling on admissibility of the expert?
Well, and I think an argument could be made that you should mandamus the court when reversible error is already built in, because the trial and the appeal are a fiction. Reversible error is already built in. However, I'm not asking you to do that in this case. I'm asking for a more limited holding that in this particular circumstance, and one reason is, an additional reason to the reasons I've talked about, is to protect the integrity of the venue statutes, and because that is the only way you can do that. If the plaintiffs are allowed to circumvent that statute by just form shopping and trying to find a judge they think that will rule in their favor, then the whole intent of that statute is vitiated and it becomes meaningless. The venue statutes are considered important by the state of Texas. That's clear from the amount of litigation that goes over venue and the amount of legislation we've had. And it's important that cases are tried in proper counties where those counties have a connection to the case and to the cause of action.
What about our language in Walker v. Packer that an appellate remedy is not inadequate just because it may involve more expense or may involve delay?
Yes, Your Honor. And in your last, your two most recent cases on mandamus in AIU and in every In Re Prudential, they both addressed that issue and said it's not just the mere expense, it's these other public and private interests that we have to consider. It's the impact on the legal system to allow...
But it's not like Masonite. So you're really sort of advocating a public policy exception to the rule in Walker?
Well, not one that's already... One that's, in my opinion, already there. And when you combine In Re Masonite with In Re Prudential and In Re AIU, where this court has adopted a balancing test to see what benefits there are to having mandamus and then what detriments will occur if you don't, I think the balance comes out in our favor as a matter of public policy. This allows an abuse of the system. It allows plaintiffs to take advantage of defendants who have...
If the Harris County Court, where it was first filed, had denied motion to transfer venue, would we have mandamus to look at that and say that was wrong?
No, Your Honor. No, no. That's clearly...
So how are you any worse off in this situation?
Well, because in that...
And then...
Well, in that situation, we would have followed the rule, and that would have been if we had disagreed with the trial court... We could have tried it in Harris County, and we could have appealed and proven that Williamson County was the proper county.
Case had no connection with Harris County, apparently.
Well, the plaintiffs live there and claim that they put the plane kit together there before they took off.
Well, let's assume they had no connection other than the fact that they live there, which is usually not good enough under the venue statute. So if you'd have lost that one, you concede you wouldn't have had we wouldn't have had jurisdiction to grant mandamus to say no, it's got to go to Williamson.
I think that's
so really the
it goes both ways to the plaintiff and the defendant. If whoever loses the venue hearing has the burden of trying the case in that county and proving that the venue decision was wrong.
Right. So, the difference in our case and the hypothetical I ask about is, frankly, just the difference in the egregiousness of the behavior of non-suit and filing the case a second time to avoid a court's decision.
Well, that's certainly part of it. But also, it's an opportunity for further abuse. For instance, right now, we could go, if y'all don't issue mandamus, you lift the stay order, and we go back to trial in Fort Bend County, we could pick a jury. The plaintiffs could decide they don't really like the looks of that jury or they don't think the judge is as friendly as they thought, and non-suit again. And they can go file in another county. And they can keep refiling until they find a judge.
As long as limitations hadn't run, they can always do that.
Right, exactly.
Your case is a little stronger because they fought it out, and we had an order saying venue goes to Williamson County. So they're not just circumventing a judge they don't like. They're defying an order.
They're defying an order, and they're circumventing that statute, which is you have one venue hearing, and that has a collateral estoppel effect on that case and any subsequently filed cases. And what they have done is they said, and the trial court has said, you know what, we don't care what that statute says, and we're not going to give it collateral estoppel effect, and we're just going to go file till we find a court we like better and a decision we like better. And that's an abuse of the system. And that's why I think this case sets it apart and makes it fall within the exceptional circumstances type cases where y'all have granted mandamus.
If we don't grant mandamus here, what effect would that have in your view on just affecting settlement dynamics, on kind of injecting a sort of new atmospherics into a case that may kind of ratchet up gamesmanship, if at all?
Well, I mean, you know, Your Honor, it has huge effects in those kind of issues. It can definitely affect the resources of our client to the point where they may have to settle a case they would not otherwise settle. It invites gamesmanship. It has a court that has no connection to this case making vital decisions and legal decisions about this case. For instance, we have a spoliation issue where we have a motion to dismiss based on, you know, the part of the cause of action is missing. This judge in Fort Bend County should not be making that decision. The Williamson County should be making that decision.
Was there a transcript of the venue hearing in Fort Bend County?
No, Your Honor. It was not on record.
So we don't have the recorded comments of the judge or the rationale?
No, Your Honor. I wish you did, but we have not brought those forth since they are not of record, just the evidence that was submitted.
Any further questions?
I'm sorry, my time's up. Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from the real parties.
May it please the court, Mr. Evans, present argument for the real parties in interest.
Members of the court, opposing counsel, my name is Gary Evans. It is my distinct privilege to represent the Creekmore family in this case, including Leslie, Denise, Kevin, Mitch, and Gary Creekmore. And those are the loving wife, daughter, and sons of Thomas Dwight Creekmore, who lost his life on December 20th, 2002, in Fort Bend County, Texas, when the experimental aircraft that he was flying went out of control, crashed in Fort Bend County, Texas.
Do decedents get two bites at the venue apple and everybody else doesn't? Or do they all get the same?
In this case, Your Honor, the plaintiffs chose to file suit in Harris County.
And you fought it and lost.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so why isn't non-suiting and refiling sour grapes?
We looked at the use of the non-suit, Justice Brister, as, like many of the tools of civil procedure, as a remedy. The remedy that the family was looking at the time was whether or not they could try the case, take it up on appeal, believing that Judge Tony Lindsay had erred in her venue ruling, or whether, as the Supreme Court has talked about in previous cases, whether you can use it as a remedial measure and vitiate the effect of a ruling that is believed to be erroneous. Therefore, the plaintiffs are certainly not looking at it as a second bite at the apple. They're looking at it as a remedy that was used to correct.
But if your position is right, then plaintiffs have a remedy for a wrong venue ruling and defendants don't. Because defendants can't get mandamus review, your position is. But plaintiffs don't need mandamus review because you can just non-suit and file over again wherever you want.
It would seem that depending upon how the court rules in this particular case, Your Honor, that either both parties could seek mandamus on an erroneous venue ruling, or the playing field could be rendered somewhat unlevel by having one party, just as in the Harris County case, where the plaintiffs could not seek an interlocutory appeal or mandamus review of Judge Lindsay's determination on venue. Now, again, we believe that the relators are similarly bound by Judge Culver's decision.
What's the fairness of a rule that defendants have to sit through the whole trial in the wrong place, but plaintiffs don't? You get the first choice the first time anyway. Why should you get the first and second and third and fourth, and the defendants get no choice?
If I understand the relator's argument with respect to the refiling issue in the first place. With all due respect to opposing counsel, the statute has run on this case. There will be no further non-suiting and refiling simply because it's not feasible. The statute of limitations scheme in the state of Texas already operates to limit the number of occasions upon which you can file a case, and then if you suffer an erroneous ruling, seek some type of remedy that may or may not be an appeal or may not be some type of mandamus.
But the remedy that you sought, though, looking at Section 5 of Rule 87, It seems difficult under the language of that rule to argue that that was appropriate or valid. Subsection 5 says, if an action has been transferred to a proper county in response to a motion to transfer, then no further motions to transfer shall be considered, regardless of whether the movement was a party to the prior proceeding or was added as a party subsequent. So the rule contemplates more than one proceeding in different places and says you only get one. It's going to be difficult for me to see the merits of your position on the transfer. I've got serious questions about the mandamus issue. But
certainly not.
Why were you so adamant to stay out of Williamson County?
It wasn't a matter of being adamant, Your Honor. It was a matter of looking at the facts of the case as we presented to the Harris County District Court judge. We felt that there were substantial events that took place in Harris County. It was not a convenience issue. It was the venue facts included contract negotiations that took place in Harris County. Building instructions were provided to Dr. Creekmore in Harris County.
But they argue there's a different problem here. That's collateral estoppel. If two parties in litigation fight about an issue, a judge makes a ruling. And if you don't like it, you have to appeal. You can't wait till a second suit later and fight about it then. You can't come back to us in your second suit and say Judge Tony Lindsay was wrong because you waived that when you non-suited.
We relied upon, Your Honor, this previous court's the court's previous rulings in the Aetna Casualty case, 849 Southwest 2nd 805, where the court held that the plaintiff is not precluded from refiling its claims in any respect so long as the statute of limitations does not preclude a refiling.
Was that a case where they'd had a hearing and a judge had ruled?
That case, I believe, Your Honor, just addresses the remedial effect, so to speak.
How are you not going to be barred? Forget about whether Williamson County is good, bad, or indifferent. By collateral estoppel, that there was a prior order litigated by the parties, and therefore it doesn't matter what the facts are in Williamson County. That's already been decided.
It was decided, and again, going back to Justice Wainwright's question, the case was decided with respect to the venue facts that existed in Harris County. And again, I think we're looking at a situation, Your Honor, where the parties should be on the same playing field. And depending upon what the court rules, the question is whether or not a party has a remedy on appeal. And, of course, the real parties in interest, the Creekmore family, believes that both parties in this case have a remedy on appeal, as we've talked about. And Justice O'Neill's question regarding that was directly on point.
Suppose you knew now, or suppose you were to be told authoritatively that you can't non-suit and avoid a venue ruling, and that therefore it's reversible error. Do you still want to go forward in a trial that is going to be reversed no matter what?
I wish I had that crystal ball, Your Honor. But in this case,
you can't win.
It's just one aspect of the case. And I think the question is whether or not this court wishes to expand the ability to seek mandamus of a trial court judge in matters that are incidental to the case. By definition, venue determinations are incidental to the case.
It does involve that, but I'm just wondering from your point of view, if you knew that that was the answer, would you want to go forward knowing that no matter what it's going to, even if you win, it's going to be reversed?
Your Honor, I would like to move forward in any venue in which the case can be tried under equitable, in an equitable form.
So I'm not sure that
is that yes or no.
I think everybody would. But I'm just wondering if you knew that this procedure would not avoid the venue ruling, if you knew that, no question about it, and therefore it was going, no matter what is the outcome in the trial court, the case is going to be reversed, would you want to go forward or not? I'm just wondering.
Well, and to be quite frank, Your Honor, I don't think I'd want to move forward in any situation where I felt that reversible error was absolutely the ultimate result of a trial. I don't think that'd be in anybody's best interest. However, we don't believe that the legal landscape, certainly at the time that the non-suit was filed, at the time the case was refiled, in Fort Bend County stands for that proposition in any respect.
I know that's your argument, and I was really just focusing on the adequacy of the remedy by appeal, because I was wondering, I know you have an argument about whether it was a clear abuse of discretion, and I don't want to ask you about that in just a second, but if it was, if the relator prevails on that point, do you want mandamus to be the remedy to be withheld so that now you can't go forward without a reversal and you can't non-suit and refile because limitations is run?
If I understand Your Honor's question, it seems to me that it's extremely difficult to separate the adequacy of the appeal issue from whether or not Judge Culver abused his discretion in declining to transfer the case to Williamson County.
So
and quite frankly, the judge's decision, he looked at 87 subsection 5, and reading the plain text of 87 subsection 5, he determined that he was not barred from declining to transfer the case to Williamson County. Rule 87 on its face does not refer to previously filed cases. And as we've mentioned in our brief, the Creekmore family is relying upon the Supreme Court's line of cases that says that a non-suit will put you back in the position that you were in originally. And I think, again, looking at that as a remedial measure, like many of the tools of civil procedure and like in an interlocutory appeal or a mandamus, it assures the party of being able to move forward on terms that it believes to be correct under the circumstances. And I would ask the court also to consider if the court expands this to a ruling and makes the various courts of appeals who have addressed this issue and sought to modify the terms of Rule 87 and expand it to previously filed proceedings, I can think of additional types of circumstances that would be slightly similar, although would they or would they not come under the same process. In other words,
let me interrupt you to ask you about that. You mentioned the other courts of appeals. I think there are three, are there, that have gone the other way?
Yes, Your Honor.
And do you think that sets up a conflict between those courts and the court in this case, whichever one it was, the 14th court?
I believe that the courts of appeal are in conflict as to whether or not Rule 87 pertains to previously filed cases.
And I think that's whether mandamus is available.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. So they're in conflict on the issues in this case.
Yes, Your Honor. And that, again, goes to the wisdom of Judge Culver's discretion with respect to this matter. And, again, with the relator's burden of proof on showing that the law was, you know, fully settled in that regard, that would be the entry-level proposition that the relators must prevail on before they can show that Judge Culver failed to abide by that well-settled law and therefore abused his discretion. So we have in that unbroken chain that the relators need to develop in order to be granted their mandamus relief. The first, of course, is whether or not the law was well settled in that regard, and I think we do have, you know, significant conflict in the courts of appeal.
How does your position and posturing not encourage forum shopping? Because it seems to me that that's exactly what could occur here.
Yes, Your Honor. The concept of forum shopping, I think, was very well illustrated in the NRA Shell case, and there you had multiple lawsuits filed in multiple venues, and apparently the plaintiffs are going to seek, go with a lawsuit that they felt was going to be in the most favorable forum. I would certainly distinguish that case on the facts from this matter, Your Honor. In this case, again, good venue facts in Harris County. In fact, the venue is a difficult creature to work with on many, 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 many different levels. But in this case, good venue facts in Harris County and an erroneous decision with respect to the plaintiff's perspective. Once the court made that determination, there's also no question in this case that Fort Bend County is proper venue. And Judge Culver noted this, although it was not transcribed, but Judge Culver noted that the accident did, in fact, take place in Fort Bend County. It took place almost within view of the Fort Bend County Courthouse. And so in that particular case, we started off with what the plaintiffs believed to be a good venue. Once it was transferred to Williamson County, which under the general venue statute is proper venue as to the defendants, but only if the plaintiffs elected to file suit in Williamson County and could maintain venue no place else. Well, certainly with Fort Bend County being appropriate venue, that's why it was filed there. And the general venue statute, in getting back to your original question, Your Honor, is that the general venue statute gives us guidelines where the cases can be filed. I don't know of a single case that could be filed in 256, counties within the state of Texas.
Counsel, going back to what
254.
Going back to what Justice was addressing earlier, let's assume for a moment that there is clear error here, an abuse of discretion. Your position is there's not. But if we assume that for a moment, what benefit to the system do you see in our denying mandamus and making the parties go through the process knowing there's reversible error here? What you may choose to, that would be your choice. If let's assume it's a clear, reversible error. What benefit to anyone other than maybe to the plaintiffs to settle for litigation costs or something, but does the system benefit? Let's talk about your benefits and detriments. Can you address those?
Yes, Your Honor, I'd be very pleased to. The benefit, Your Honor, is that it levels the playing field with respect to the manner in which the litigants manage and prosecute and or defend their case. As we discussed originally, the case in Harris County, what the plaintiffs believed to be an erroneous venue ruling was
right. Levels the playing field by letting you get out of it, but not the defendants. So, what other than that?
Well, and again, the defendants have the playing field issue here, Your Honor, where if they are granted mandamus relief by this court, that is relief that was not available to the plaintiffs when they filed the case originally in Harris County.
Well, we're also talking. It's an easier case when we can talk about clear error. And, the assumption was you agree with us that it's clear error, then what are the benefits and the detriments? But aren't there disagreements in Texas about legal rulings that a trial court makes, either granting directed verdict or not, or summary judgment or not, or venue rulings or not, where the parties disagree about the legal validity of that ruling? And if there are disagreements like that, is there a cost to the system to delay, to stop a trial every time one party thinks that the trial judge made a wrong error on a dispositive matter or on a venue ruling or whatsoever?
Your Honor, I think those disagreements are more the rule than they are the exception, to be quite honest with you. However, in this case, the question from the Creekmore family's perspective is to what degree does an appellate court or does this court become involved in incidental rulings that are the day-to-day province of a trial court judge. And venue is...
And that's a discretionary, and the answer is as much as they want to, right? There's not a jurisdictional problem there.
There's no jurisdictional problem at all, Your Honor, but it does go to whether or not the exceptional, extraordinary circumstances are presented.
Well, how many appellate courts have you seen that just can't wait to get a lot more involved in incidental rulings? Do you think there's really a serious risk that appellate courts want to do that?
Your Honor, I'm a veteran of exactly one appellate argument. I have no idea.
Okay, I won't hold you to it.
Let me ask you, I understand that you think that that you're entitled to non-suit when you want to, and the authority to support that. Could you have refiled in Harris County?
Your Honor, that was the question I was going to touch on earlier, because if the court grants mandamus in this situation, if the case was refiled in Harris County, the local rule, as Judge Brister knows, Justice Brister knows,
goes back to Judge Lindsay.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's exactly what would have happened in that case. So we'd be back in Judge Lindsay's court.
So clearly, you were trying to circumvent the ruling by the trial court when you had to switch to a different county.
Your Honor, we can talk about the actual, you know, the intent. Circumvent to me is a little bit more of an aggressive word than.
But if you, I think Judge Green's point is, if you had a county that didn't have such a local rule, as they have in Harris County, one could basically shop judge to judge.
You could, and until the statute ran, Your Honor. Yes.
Right.
And the question, the related question, Your Honor, is let's say you started off in another venue, same venue, different form. Let's say you started off in the county court, and you felt that there was a ruling in county court that was not something that you wanted to tag along with you all the way through trial, and you non-suit that case, and then you refile it in district court where it has concurrent jurisdiction. A very similar situation is presented there. Is you know, the court going to allow mandamus to say, well, you can't refile in district court, that has to go back to county court where it began? And I think that's another variation on whether or not those exceptional, extraordinary circumstances are presented,
so,
whereby mandamus is available.
You think it's a good rule if this court says it's okay to do that or not?
It's a rule, Your Honor, in accordance with the court's previous rulings. And in this particular case, it opens the door. You know, there are two slippery slopes, if I may, Your Honor, that are presented here. One is the possibility of plaintiffs filing and refiling cases when they feel as though they do not have the case properly postured, you know, for any reason at the trial court level. The other slippery slope is, to me, the more significant of the two, which is, again, how involved is the court willing to get into these matters that are incidental to the administration of the case.
Further questions?
Yes, Chief. What was your position on why venue was proper in Harris County?
Oh, Your Honor, there were we provided to Judge Lindsay an affidavit by Gary Creekmore. Gary Creekmore was involved with all sorts of his father's aviation activities. And Gary Creekmore attested to the various things that took place in Harris County. The defendants had shipped parts to and from Harris County. The defendants had entered into contract negotiations in Harris County. Mr. Frederick had provided all sorts of coaching and instructions to Dr. Creekmore in Harris County.
But you're under the substantial part of the cause of action statute, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So it was your position that a substantial part of the cause of action arose because of negotiations, other activities, and
yes, Your Honor.
Of course, the defendants deny that happened in Harris County. They say the parts were delivered to an agent in Guadalupe County and other things. Was there contested evidence on that the judge decided?
Your Honor, there was contested evidence, but I don't. Thinking back to the venue hearing in Harris County, I don't believe that the defendants contested the venue facts that were pled through Gary Creekmore's affidavit. That's why we felt that it was an erroneous ruling by Judge Lindsay, because looking at the general venue rule and how it is to be interpreted, the burden on the defendants at that point was to conclusively demonstrate that none of those venue facts took place in Harris County. They didn't do that, but Judge Lindsay transferred the case notwithstanding.
Further questions? Thank you, counsel. Thank you.
Your Honors, in response to the last question, I would just like to add that the question of whether the Harris County ruling on venue is final, because it was not appealed by the plaintiffs. That judgment is final and non-appealable. So there's no issue before this court, in my opinion, as to whether the decision to transfer it to Williamson County was correct. They made that choice, and in my opinion, it was a fatal error, because now the only proper county to try this case in is Williamson County. The fact is, there is no benefit that can occur or accrue to anyone or anything to go forward with this case in Fort Bend County. There's only detriment to the parties, to the system.
And you're talking about the balancing that you referenced from AIU and Prudential. Do you believe those two cases change the mandamus standard from Walker?
I don't know that they change it, but they do get more specific about in what circumstances the court will consider mandamus. And I would I would submit that here you have an even stronger case for mandamus than in those in Prudential and AIU, because there you're simply protecting a private agreement between two parties as to form selection and waiver of a jury trial. Here you're protecting the legislature statute that says this is the way we are going to decide venue in these cases.
Without AIU and Prudential, do you think you would be successful on your mandamus argument?
I think we would, Your Honor. I think we would fall within the exceptional circumstances test set forth in Masonite.
Even though Bridgestone says they're not exceptional circumstances, venue's not reviewable by mandamus generally?
I think so, Your Honor, because of the things I talked about, because it is subject to repeated actions by plaintiffs in circumventing the statute. I think those are the two main reasons. It leads to abuse of the system. It leads to circumventing the statute. And it's irreparable harm is what it is. There's no way to remedy trying a case in the wrong county by a regular appeal.
So do you think Bridgestone would need to be modified or overruled, or Bridgestone just missed it when it said there are no extraordinary circumstances in that case?
Your Honor, I have to be honest and say I don't remember if the facts of that case were exactly like ours, so I can't say honestly whether that can be distinguished or not, but I'll be happy to brief that for you.
What's the plaintiff's remedy when the trial court makes an erroneous decision, as opposing counsel contends Judge Lindsay did?
The statute is set up, whether it's the plaintiff or the defendant who loses, they have to try the case in that county
and then appeal.
And it's their burden to show that the trial court made a mistake. And what they have done is they have shifted that burden to us to try a case in a wrong county and appeal and try it again in the right county when we already know we're in the wrong county. And I just feel like, you know, just from a common sense and just overview point of view in this case, there's really not much of an argument not to issue mandamus. If the court will make clear that this is subject to mandamus, it's not going to happen. Because you can go to the Fort Bend County and say, look, if you do this, Judge, you're going to be subject to mandamus because the law is clear that we're not going to allow you to try this in the wrong county. And just to illustrate very quickly what can happen with the abuse of the judicial resources, what if this was a different than like an individual against a small corporation? What if it was a large corporation against an individual, as in a commercial case or contract case? That could change completely the dynamics of the lawsuit, because that defendant would be able to just pound that defendant and incur cost, utterly wasted cost.
Only wasted if you don't win below. I mean, you could win below.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Because, you know, if they're going to stretch it out by delay, by expenses of expert witnesses, and so forth, we may not make it to that point because of limited resources. And sometimes you have to do that in some scenarios, but here you don't. There's no reason to. From any point of view, in my opinion, I believe that this court needs to stop this kind of abuse of the system. Number one, to prevent abuse of our judicial system, to discourage gamesmanship like occurred here, to uphold the integrity of the venue statute and to enforce it in a meaningful way, and to prevent utterly wasted resources. And unless there are any further questions, the relators request that mandamus issue to the Fort Bend County judge to remand the case or to transfer it back to Williamson County.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted, and that concludes the arguments for today. The marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise. Oh, yay, oh, yay, oh, yay.
The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned.